Hello.
Hello. I'm August.
And I'm Kendra.
And welcome to Book Dumb, the bookcast brought to you by a couple of dummies.
This week, we're doing a super fun episode, thanks to August. We're thinking, it was your idea. It was a great idea. She just made a face at me. And it is books, or not just books, things you can read in one sitting. So If they're books, maybe they're shorter books that like are fast paced and you get really swept up in, or maybe they're short stories, maybe they're poetry collections,
plays.
Yeah. I was like, what other media are there?
Novellas, articles. We're not putting any articles in here.
Put an op-ed from the New Yorker in there.
Yes. Here's my 5 theories of psychoanalysis by a guy named Freud. This is a one sitting read.
I'm going to put you in the waiting room.
Don't.
I won't do it.
What would your mother say about that?
You know, Anne, I feel like she would say it was warranted.
Okay, but what would Freud's mother say about that?
She would say, you're trying to fuck me, to Freud.
Yep, I think that is enough Freud talk for now. I'm already sick of it. I'm sorry I brought him up. So yeah, we're talking about our favorite one-sitting reads. These are books that we found to be really, really good. I think we read pretty much all of these in one sitting ourselves. But again, everyone likes different things. So let us know if you hate any of these books or if you have any one sitting reads that you think that we would really enjoy.
I love one sitting reads. I just love sitting in one place and reading.
What's better?
I don't know.
I don't think anything. But before we get into our list, which we have some honorable mentions and some books also on our TBR, do you want to tell me what you're reading right now?
Funny, we just recorded the Dark Academia episode, and then literally the next day I got from Libby Bunny, because I've been on the wait list for, I don't know, like 4 weeks or whatever. So I'm about halfway through Bunny, and it's an audiobook, and let me tell you folks, I don't know if I should be listening to it. It is crazy.
Okay, I have a physical copy of that one. I need to get to it.
Of my experience so far, I wish I had the physical copy, but now I'm like in too deep in the audiobook where I'm like, well, I'm going to finish it. It's fun, but it's wild.
I can bring you over the physical copy next time I see you.
I'm okay. I can't like switch from, you know, when you're like listening to an audiobook, I need to continue as the audiobook, or there's like this weird, like, I don't know, dissonance.
Just an entirely different experience. So I think that's understandable.
Thank you. Well, what are you reading?
I'm glad that you're enjoying that book. It makes me even more excited to read it and figure out what the fuck's happening there.
I honestly can't tell you if you're going to love it or hate it. Like, I think you're going to have a strong reaction either way.
Okay. Nice. Well, I'm reading something that's not nearly as exciting, but it's important. And it's actually something that I have to read for school, or I get to read for school. It's a privilege to be able to read this. And that's The Intersectional Internet. And it's a collection of essays. I believe there's about maybe a little bit under 20 essays about intersectionality in different fields relating to internet usage. So I'm studying information and library science. So it's all related to that, which I know doesn't sound very exciting. But this collection has some really cool essays. Like there was one on queer voices on YouTube, Grand Theft Auto 5, and that how that relates to Ferguson, because Grand Theft Auto 5 came out when all of that was happening. I say very articulately. Ugh. It's a really good collection of essays so far. It's from a university press. It seems like a small collection that was put together, but it's been really good so far.
That sounds really necessary and really interesting.
Yeah. Who knew about all of the racism and sexism online? Oh, wait, we all did. Okay, so let's get into this episode. So we're doing our favorite one-sitting reads. So these were quick reads that we thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed. Before we jump into our full list, do you want to share your honorable mentions with me?
Yeah, I have two, and they're both books. The reason they're honorable mentions is because I've talked about them a lot already.
Ditto.
Oh no, I wonder if we have any overlap here. Okay, the first one for me is Red at the Bone by Jacqueline Woodson. who, as you know, August, it's one of my favorite books of all time. I think it's beautiful.
I almost put this book on my list, but I knew you were going to talk about it. So I was like, I'll let Kendra have that one. That definitely is a one sitting read though.
Super short, super sweet.
Okay. And my first honorable mention is Me Talk Pretty One Day by David Sedaris. This is just a really fun collection of essays, and I love David Sedaris. If you haven't read any of that, if you haven't read any of his books, you should start with this one.
I knew Sedaris was going to show up maybe twice. Who knows? Maybe four times.
Nope, there's only one. I'm guaranteeing you right now. I limited myself. I showed some restraint.
And my next one is one we have a full episode on, which is I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Is it also on your list? You just made a face.
I almost put it on mine and then I didn't because I thought that you were going to do it.
Wow, that was smart.
I forgot that we have a full episode on that. That's an early one.
Yeah, that's like OG fans, you know, first day fans. Looking at you, Mom.
And okay, my next honorable mention is Passing by Nella Larsen, which we also cover in an episode. It's our episode also on The Vanishing Half. This is a spectacular read. I love everything about it, and I feel like Nella Larsen should be read more. It's on your list, isn't it?
I'm actually just moving it now to my honorable mentions list because I just thought of another one that could be on the main list.
Oh, okay.
So
we're on the same page with these honorable mentions, man.
I know. When you said that, I was like, I fucking love Passing. It is a book everyone should be required to read.
Okay, should we jump into our lists?
Yeah, what is your number five?
My number five is actually one that I really want to reread, and that's why I put it on this list. I have not read this book in probably a decade, maybe a little less, and that's the play Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf by Edward Albee. I really enjoyed this play when I read it. I read this in high school, so full disclosure, who knows what teenage me's tastes were like. I just know that they were edgy and pretentious, so this probably fits in with that. I have seen this performed a couple of times, and I don't know, I just feel like it's worth going back to. So Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is not actually about Virginia Woolf. Big shocker, when I read it in high school, I thought it was. No joke, I was like, when's Virginia Woolf gonna show up? Me, an idiot. Whatever, let's get on with it. So in this play, there is a middle-aged couple named Martha and George, and they are not happy. Their marriage is no good. And after a faculty party one evening, they invite a younger couple, Nick and Honey, over to their home and just draw them into their bitter marriage. And it's really stressful and chaotic, but absolutely lovely and wonderful.
That does sound right up your alley, like every bit of that.
It's like, just give me the dysfunction. That's what's fun to me.
I don't know why I was like, dysfunction, what's your judge?
I put the fun in dysfunctional.
You sure do.
That's what I thought of. I'm not dysfunctional, fuck you. I'm totally well-adjusted.
I was validating your statement.
Thank you.
That's what I'm here to do.
Okay, yeah, so that's my number five. I also, there's a great film adaptation of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Okay. Out there. I haven't seen it, so I will look at it.
Maybe we can watch it together.
We probably should, because otherwise I'll forget to watch it. And then this way.
You never would. It's an American play from the 60s. I don't think there's any way that you're going to touch that.
Okay. That's really valid. Yeah, that's so true. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're right, you're right.
I'm always right. Don't stare me down. This isn't a visual medium.
Pregnant pause. Are you ready for my number five?
No. Yes. Tell me, please. I'm dying to know.
Okay. Franny and Zooey by J.D. Salinger.
I fucking knew it. I knew it was coming.
I love it. Technically, I know these are two separate short stories that were originally published in The New Yorker separately. But they were intended to be read together, and that's how I read them. So I see them as one, like, really short novel or novella, as some might say. And it's great. Okay, what can I say? It's about the Glass family, but it's about Franny and Zooey, whose brother is Seymour, who shows up in another short story tragically.
Seymour, an introduction, right?
Yeah, and raise high the roof high beams.
Carpenters. I just know Carpenters in that title somewhere.
Yeah, Raise High the Carp. I don't, The
Glass family. Who knows?
Glass family. They show up in a few. There's also like the banana. Sorry, I'm not like, it's all coming at once. They show up in like not as main characters, but they show up in other stories. I was such a huge Salinger fan as a teenager. That was like my pretentious era. That's as close as I got to being pretentious.
Oh, and you're not pretentious now, Miss Milton.
As soon as that came out of my mouth, I was like, I'm just
pretending. Some self-awareness.
You're right. I got to hold myself accountable. But thank you for that. And I love this story. I think it's hard to explain exactly what it's about. So obviously there's Franny's narrative and then there's Zooey's narrative, but it kind of surrounds the same conflict, which is Franny having like this existential crisis. And you spend a lot of time in her head, and then you see her relationship with Zooey, her brother, and their relationship with their other siblings. And the Glass family is really interesting. They were like these child geniuses who are on TV, and like I'm trying to think of an equivalent, like
Royal Tenenbaums. It's based Royal off Tenenbaums. Of the yeah. series. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never seen that. No, I love what Sanders.
It's playing at our local theater, The Roxy, this upcoming week, I believe.
Oh, that's a great Roxy. One. Okay. Well, I know I need to watch it. I keep meaning to. I mean, there's so many movies. I just like I don't know why. I just don't watch a lot of stuff. Anymore.
A lot of time, so that's okay.
I could make time. Anyway, and now I'm just thinking of all the things in my life I want to watch before I die.
Watch and read, just spend all the time in the world.
Oh my god, the dream. Okay, but yeah, this is a great short story / novella collection. I would highly recommend it. It's super short. It's like 90 pages and it goes by super quickly, and it's a lot of like introspection and these like big questions, like who am I as a person, what gives my life meaning, and then ultimately I'm going to argue that it's our human connections. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful narrative, especially if you're a sibling. I think it made me like really, really just want to like call my siblings and tell them I love them.
Aww. And those pocketbooks for like that series are all super, super cute as well. So you can also just do it for the aesthetic.
Yeah. I guess I would also tag on the 9 stories, which is the title of the short story collection, where like some of the Glass family members show up. Mm-hmm. All of those stories are really, really great.
Big Joyce vibes there with having the same characters spread throughout numerous works, but I won't go into that. I really want to though, but I won't.
You're going to be so mad at me. I was like, who's Joyce?
Bitch.
I know. I'm sorry. It took me a second. I was like, oh, James Joyce.
The Joyce is actually Nora Joyce, his wife, fucking legend, but also fuckman. Okay, so my next choice it's funny that I just said fuckman. My number 4 choice is A Single Man by Christopher Isherwood, which came out in 1964. I just read this. I listened to the audiobook of it, and it's definitely a one-sitting read. I had seen the film, which is stunning, perfection, absolutely wonderful, directed and done by Tom Ford, the designer. It's just a really important story, and I'm glad that it's told. It also is, there are problems with it, mainly that it's focused on, or it's a very, very white film and also a very white book, only showing a very small realm of queer experience for this time. So just be aware that this is, you know, it's a queer man in the 60s, but he's white. He has that privilege of passing as well. So just to address that from the get-go. So A Single Man takes place in Southern California in 1962 and is focused on a single day in the life of a queer professor whose name is George, who's English and teaches at a university in Los Angeles. We don't really know exactly what university, but actually the author, Christopher Isherwood, he taught at CSULA. So I'm going to say that it's that one. Because why not incorporate reality into your texts? And George is, you know, he's struggling. He has recently lost his partner, Jim. And there's a number of other things going on. And as a queer person during this time, he is not able to be fully open with talking about that. And so it just like goes into his depression, his feelings of isolation, of being unable to talk about this loss or really fully process it. But this is one of the more beautiful books that I've read this year. I listened to it, and typically with books that I find to be just so beautiful, I don't like listening to the audiobook, but since I had seen the film before, I went ahead with it and really enjoyed it, enjoyed that experience, but I will be picking up a physical copy as soon as I can.
Mm-hmm. I totally get that.
Yeah. It's so good. And Colin Firth,
mm-hmm.
he plays them in the film. So
we love him.
Yeah.
A great alternative Darcy. Nothing like Matthew McFadden, but great alternative.
Okay. What is your number four? Tell me.
My number four is Another Brooklyn by Jacqueline Woodson. So a repeat author here. She writes a lot of short, like all of her novels are really, really short. And I actually listened to this audiobook, which was like 3 hours maybe.
Oh, wow.
It was super short. I do think I would have preferred to read it. Similarly to like what you were just saying, is that she is such a powerful, like emphatic writer that like her sentences, I find myself like going back. She has like this musical quality to how she writes her stories. And so I personally like really like to just like stare at the words that she writes, especially because they're so short. So she packs a lot of beauty and like subtext into her lines. And so that's also very present with Another Brooklyn. I will say it's not as strong to me as Red at the Bone is. And I also acknowledge that I listened to it. So it's a very different experience. It's another one of those narratives where like Red at the Bone is the same way where you get different perspectives. This one is like kind of a flash forward, flashback narrative. And it's the experience of this group of friends growing up in Brooklyn in the 70s. I could be 60s. I think it's the 70s. There's a main girl called August.
What? You know, actually with reading, I don't really come by a lot of other Augustes. So that's really nice.
Now like that August I've said Wilson. August Wilson. Who's August Wilson?
The playwright.
Oh.
He's not a character. He's just the only August that really pops up a lot.
Yeah. I remember that striking me because I was like, I know a bitch also called August.
Here I am. No, I was not born in August. Stop asking me.
Yeah, I know. I remember asking you that when I first met you, and I remember you like rolling your eyes because I know you said it. It's the
most common question I get.
Because I was like, it's a name I've never encountered. I love your name. I think your name is so cool.
Thank you.
I love it.
I think Kendra is also really cool.
That's
the person and the name.
Oh, well, now I know you're just lying. Anyway, another Brooklyn Bridge.
I really would like to read that. I listened to Red at the Bone and I've been like, kind of, you know, I have it saved on my Libby as something to listen to. I'm Another Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it, but a short audiobook sounds really good right now.
Oh, it's so short. Yeah. I did it like, obviously in one day, but like in one sitting, I was like walking and doing chores and stuff. And it's nice because it's like a really good commentary on like girlhood and Black girlhood and what it means to like be growing up in that time period when things are very different and like the changing of neighborhoods. And it's a really great story. I wish I'd read it physically because I think it would have been more powerful for me that way.
Okay, good to know. Good to know that you also need a physical copy so I can just clock that for future gift giving.
So that brings us to your number four, right?
My number three.
Can I count? Obviously not.
No, we're not math people. God. So my number three is another one that I really want to reread, and that's Miss Lonely Hearts by Nathaniel West. You know, there's a lot of stuff happening in this story. I'll just go through the brief bio and then we can get into all of that in a second. So Miss Lonely Hearts focus is on an unnamed columnist who writes a column for the Lovelorn and Lonesome. So if you've ever heard of like a Miss Lonely Hearts letter, he is the person that's publishing those and essentially responding to them with advice. So he responds to these letters that are sent to the newspaper that he works for. These letters have made him feel very depressed and, you know, just not his best self. He is definitely in some sort of rut and feels a little unsure of how to get out of it. And he does some things to try and get out of that depression or get out of that rut, which is largely caused by the letters, and won't give away what happens, but it's not good. But just to address this, this is a book that was, or this is a short story that was written in the 1930s. There is some very misogynistic language in here. So just be warned going into that. I knew about that going into it, but I was really interested in the idea of being in the mind of a Miss Lonely Hearts figure. So just pushing that out there. But if that does not sound good to you, you don't want to read it at all. He has another short story called The Day of the Locust, which is also really good. I didn't finish that one in one sitting. I didn't like it as much as Miss Lonely Hearts, but it's still good. But also it's written by a white man in the 1930s. So just be aware of that going into it.
Noted in very important context.
Yeah. So that's my number three.
My number three is actually going to be a collection of poetry.
Oh, big surprise.
Big surprise. Y'all know I love poetry. And that's going to be Richard Sykin's, I think it's Sykin, Crush. It's a collection of poetry that my older sister Allie currently has and did not like. So we no longer like my older sister Allie.
No, I like Allie a lot.
But she's been canceled.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So let the internet know. I love his poetry. It's super powerful. It's also filled with like a lot of self-loathing and regret and like the repulsion and just like a lot of really just uncomfortable and nasty feelings. A lot of that has to do with like him, like he's gay. And so like as a young, like having flashbacks to when he experienced like intense bullying because of homophobia, or like loving someone who isn't ready to be out. And so like a lot of pain attached to like your sexual identity and like your gender identity as well. It's a bit older, and I say that, I mean like mid 2000s. So like not super old, but it's just like, it's not a recent collection. There's just like such vivid imagery, like of hands and throats, and like,
love that.
I love it. And it's a lot of times like he'll talk directly to someone in his poetry, which I love when a poet uses second person. It just really strikes me. And so it'll be like a lot of, you did this, I saw this, like all of this really great direct dialogue from, or like a direct conversation. It's great. If you don't like poetry, I'd recommend it.
Maybe I'll check it out. Who knows? I love hand imagery. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really great. It is really tough to read at times.
Yeah, it sounds like people should go into that, maybe having an idea of what's being discussed.
Yeah, a lot of physical abuse discussed. I don't remember sexual abuse, but I will say it's possible. And most commonly, like homophobia and internalized homophobia as well.
Yeah, definitely hard things to read, but things that should be read.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, my number two is, I picked a single short story out of a short story collection, but I would say you could also just read the whole collection in one sitting because it's fucking great. And that's The Ballad of Sad Cafe, or The Ballad of the Sad Cafe by Carson McCullers, which I also just read recently and I'm obsessed with, and I'm mad at myself for not having read it earlier. Also because she's just like one of the premier American writers from the time period where I read a lot of work from, which is the 50s. And the fact that I hadn't read anything by her is pretty gross and probably highlights the fact that my education is rooted in like only works from white guys. So love being reminded of that because we gotta be. So just throwing this out here, I really, really loved it. So The Ballad of the Sad Cafe is about a cafe that opens in a small isolated town somewhere in the South. I don't know if it's ever specifically mentioned where exactly it takes place, but I'm going to say it doesn't. And that ambiguity is cool. I like that. So it's in the Southern United States and it follows the life of Miss Amelia Evans, who is the one who opens the sad cafe. She is strong and seen as calculating by people in this town. You know, she's a woman living alone who's able to, through previous privilege, you know, build herself up and have a pretty thriving business. And then she also opens this cafe with her cousin, Lemon, who enters town one day with just a suitcase. And he's seen as immediately as an outsider because he's actually hunchbacked. And so people are pretty much only focused on his physicality throughout all of it. And eventually, of course, that changes and they get to know him. But this is just a really wonderful short story about how communities can come together and be ripped apart by such small things. I am really, really happy I read this. This is like an 80-page short story. I'm going to read it again, I'm sure, before the end of this year. And also the whole short story collection, as I said earlier, is worth reading. There's some great stories about playing piano, playing music, which I did a little bit of research afterwards, and I found out that Carson McCullers was a musician for a really long time and actually wanted to go to Juilliard, but ended up not being able to afford it. And so she brought that music into her writing, not just in her prose itself, but also like directly bringing it up, which is pretty neat.
I'm really glad you shared all that, because I didn't, first of all, I'd never heard of her writing, which, as you said, just shows that like there are massive gaps in our education that we're like continuously filling. But also it's just like not an era that I'm familiar with. So it's always fun for me to hear you talk about it, because I'm like, that sounds super interesting. I'll probably never read it, but I'm also really glad to know it exists, you know?
Yeah, she has one book that I'm dying to read, and I want to get a physical copy of it, even though I have access to an audiobook, and it's called The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. And I believe that's her first work. It's what really like brought her onto the literary scene. And I've only seen great things about it. I don't know too much about the story itself, and I want to keep it that way, but I'm going to be reading that very soon, I hope.
Okay. I'm happy, or I'm excited to hear your thoughts.
Thank you. Okay. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on your number two.
I don't know if you will be.
Mine.
No, I think it's a good one. It's one of my favorite texts of all time, but some people do not like it, understandably, because it's going to be a Milton text, and that is Samson Agonistes.
This is a single sitting read for you?
Yeah, it's a one act play.
I know, but I mean, everyone's different. Me, it's like I read like one paragraph of Milton and I'm like, that's enough. I'll come back to this in a week.
I mean, yeah, we're different people. Like that's how I would react to like Hemingway or to Faulkner. I don't know. You don't even like Faulkner.
I like the Faulkner I've read. I haven't read enough Faulkner to have an opinion.
Okay, good to know. I just didn't want to categorize you as a Faulkner supporter without no. I say it's a play, but it's really more of a poem. It's a long poem. I will be upfront. It is very long. I think it's only like 1,000 lines, which is a very long poem. And some people who don't enjoy reading poetry, obviously that's not something you can do like very, you say me.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people in the world who don't enjoy poetry. August is one of them. But there are also a lot of people in the world who do enjoy poetry, and I am one of them. And I think Samson Agonistes is one of the most rewarding poems to read. I understand some people might be going, I'm not going to fucking read Milton. Like, I have no interest in it. I personally think if any of Milton's going to pull you in, it's not Paradise Lost. It's not the political prose. It's Samson Agonistes, because this is a Greek play, essentially, that he has like not only transformed the form of it, turning into like more of a poem and bringing in the chorus in a very unconventional way. But at the same time, he changes massive elements of like the essential plot of Samson and Delilah. But like, obviously Milton is very Christian and very religious. And so he does see Samson as a hero. I will argue till the day I die that Milton sees himself as a Samson-like figure, and that, and also he compares England to Samson in the way that Samson rises again over adversity. And he sees, Milton sees Samson as this figure who's so driven by faith, even when he's blinded. Milton is blind. There's a parallel. Even when he's blinded, he's guided by faith to make like the choices he needs to make that end up, I think, are bad choices, because I'm team Delilah, but that's different from the text and different from Milton's own point of view. We love Delilah. She's a badass in this version of it. So if you know nothing about Samson and Delilah, in this telling of it, it is post the shorning of the locks. So in the Samson and Delilah biblical tale, Delilah is, I've completely blanked on the country that she's from. Starts with a P. Philistine. And Samson is an Israelite. So he's from Jerusalem. He's a child of God, I say in quotes. And in Milton's telling of it, in the biblical tale, she is basically kidnapped and sex trafficked, what they would call her a concubine for that. But in Milton's telling, they fall in love and they get married. So Milton gives her this, like, what he views as a sign of respect, and puts them almost on even playing field, because Milton has a lot of respect for women for this age, and especially a lot of respect for, like, partners in a relationship. He sees it as a partnership. And so after they, like, spend the night together the first night, Delilah cuts Samson's hair because it's rumored that his power is in his hair. And so he's in a weakened state and he's taken back to her country. And Samson Agonistes opens then, where Samson is blinded. He's imprisoned. He's, like, weak. He is losing faith in God. He's having this moment of going, like, what's the point of continuing? What's my purpose? And he's feeling like he was supposed to be the hope for Israel in this tale, and he has failed them. Mm-hmm. Milton feels the same way for England. He thought he was going to free England from the monarchy, and essentially he doesn't, because the monarchy comes back, as we know. We know who William and Kate are. So they failed.
Excuse me, William and Kate, why are we focusing on them when,
Meghan and Harry?
And Harry's, what's their couple name?
Mary?
Do they have a couple name? I don't know.
Hagen?
Who knows? Not me. Wow.
Yeah, I love it. I know it's not for everyone. I do think it's tough and challenging and incredibly rewarding and fun.
Okay, well, to each their own. I mean, I love hearing you talk about Milton. I'd rather listen to you talk about Milton personally than read him.
I feel that. I'm happy to do it, as I just, like, did that long-winded summary.
Give it to me. I'll take it.
So this leads us to your number one.
Yes. And can I just throw in another honorable mention? Because I just thought of a book and I feel like a dumbass for not including it.
Of course.
I'm going to mention it really quickly. Salome by Oscar Wilde. Fantastic play. Super, super good. I think you talking about, like, not prophetizing. I think just, like, hearing you talk about Samson and Delilah, like, it just brought that to me for some reason. I guess, like, biblical interpretations. But Salome by Oscar Wilde, stellar, would recommend. Okay, so my number one, sorry for that little extra honorable mention, but my number one is a book that I love a lot. I feel like we've talked about it a couple of times, and I'm going to continue to push Kendra to read it. I know that she wants to, and she will hopefully soon, and that's Wide Sargasso Sea by Jean Rhys. A spectacular book, easily, like, one of my favorite books that I had the opportunity to read in graduate school. She has another book called Voyage in the Dark, which I also read in graduate school, that's so good, but so sad. So that's why it's not on here, but also read that one in one sitting. But Wide Sargasso Sea came out in 1966, and it's a post-colonial and feminist retelling of Jane Eyre, which is by Charlotte Bronte, which came out in 1847, so well over 100 years later. And it's from the perspective of Antoinette Causeway, who is Rhys's version of Bronte's Woman in the Attic, or Bertha Mason from Jane Eyre. I won't get too much into her in case you haven't read Jane Eyre. I don't want to spoil that. I would say you should probably read Jane Eyre first before reading Wide Sargasso Sea, but I don't think it would ruin the book for you if you hadn't read it before. Maybe watch, like, one of the film adaptations or something, but this is just absolutely stellar. So if you have to read Jane Eyre, follow it up with Wide Sargasso Sea. You'll be grateful for it. So this also goes into Antoinette's youth in Jamaica, where she is a white Caribbean woman. And so she is treated differently as other people that she was living near, as a white passing woman. Obviously, there's immense privilege that comes with that, and her social standing is also different than a lot of the people around her where she lives. And then she moves eventually to England with a man named Mr. Rochester, and some things happen, and guess what? None of them are good, but it's a great book, and I love this one so much. Would recommend highly. I love Jean Rhys's writing.
That's definitely one I really, really, really want to read. And I know I keep saying that, but there's so many books to read in the world, and things just change. I feel like Jane Eyre, I don't know if this is just because we study literature, and so this is a really, like, sheltered and ignorant statement to make, but I mean, like, I feel like Jane Eyre is a twist that everyone knows. I'm not going to say what it is at all,
I don't think so, because okay. I read Jane Eyre for the first time in undergrad, and I remember the TA spoiled the end of the fucking book for us. We had like one more class left. We had divided it up over like three or four class sessions. I can't remember exactly how many. And we had one class session left, and the TA was like, oh, I'll just get into it, like assuming that we all knew. And people in the class were like, no, like, please don't. And then she spoiled it.
That's crazy that you would actively be like, no, actually, we don't know. And they would still be like, well, I'm not telling you anymore.
Yeah, she was not my favorite TA. But I think she was just also like excited and maybe didn't realize.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably her first time teaching too. So.
Yeah. And it was in a class in front of, it was like one of the big survey classes. So there was easily 80 plus people there, which that's hard to talk in front of that many people.
I totally agree. Yeah. Still sucks that that was ruined for you.
Yeah. But so the twist isn't as widely known as we thought, or I don't know if you can we call it a twist? Is it a twist?
I don't know. I honestly
feel like,
yeah, because I think I watched the one of the movies before I ever read it. So I know that like my statement is, again, I think it was really ignorant of me to say, but it's one dangerous assumption I make all the time, because it feels like a very, I don't know, like a very popular book slash movie slash like myth in the cultural psyche.
Yeah, I definitely, I mean, I just sometimes assume like everyone knows what the Red Room is, which is also from Jane Eyre. But that's not the case, because not everyone's read that. But I would recommend Jane Eyre. It's a great book, even if you don't like books from that time period, the 1840s. Yeah, 1840s. Mm-hmm. It's pretty spooky and pretty with it.
I agree. I totally agree.
Okay, so what's your number one?
Okay. Okay. It's not a Milton, so I mean, got the Milton out of the way, but it is Paradise Rot by Jenny Hival.
Ooh.
I just talked to August about this. I think it was for a reading update, or maybe just I was probably just gushing about it recently. I love this
me
book.
Talking about how I want to steal it from you so I can read it myself.
I honestly, of all of like the books I absolutely love, because we have very different tastes, obviously, that's like the whole point of this podcast, is like how different our tastes are. I think of all the books I love, you would also love this one.
Okay.
And I say that,
I mean, it seems right up my alley, like a rotting, hello, give it to me.
Yes. And so Paradise Rot is about, a Scandinavian, I think. See, obviously I'm an idiot. Exchange student who goes to another country. I believe it's England. Wow. Do I know any of the plot elements? I don't pay attention to those things called facts. I just love the stories. And so she is a little introverted, very strange. She's never lived away from home. And so she finds a place finally to live, like a home, that's the word for it. She finds a home, and she has this roommate who is fucking weird, like in a really creepy but also like fascinating way, where she's like, I'm all like obsessed with her but also revolted by her.
Okay, I do want to read this, but as I am currently looking for a roommate, maybe I'll hold off on it actually.
It's
like my biggest fear.
Yes. I mean, it's not the healthiest roommate relationship. I think it has a lot to do with like queer desire and like that awakening of that desire. And like, there's what I love so much about it, other than like, it's kind of a reference to Paradise Lost, and there's some Paradise Lost imagery there, which is fun for me, not fun for everyone. But there is this like element of like, what is actually happening and what is like this dream, like fever dream basically, because the like reality in I'm gonna say dream, but like not just sleeping, but like visions or hallucinations blend constantly, like basically from the moment she moves into this new place.
Oh, love.
Yeah. And the dreams are like weird. It made me feel like I was on acid the whole time, and there's like fungus growing out of the wall, and there's like rotten apple imagery, just like this really claustrophobic writing style that's also very just like powerful and beautiful. And it's super short too, where I feel like if this was a book that was 300 pages long, I would fucking hate it, because nothing really happens. Like, I'll not to spoil a non-spoiler, but like nothing really really happens other than like examining this space and their relationships. It's really awesome. 5 out of 5.
really want to read this one. I remember when you got this, I was like, you're gonna read this? Like, rotting? What? Like, that's not up your alley. And I'm so glad that you liked it, because it just makes me more excited to read it.
Yeah, I know. We were at the bookstore, and I was like just trying to pick up tiny books for that tiny book challenge. And it was one of those days where I was like having a hard week, and so I was like, I'm gonna go crazy, and I did. I told my boyfriend, I was like, this is like kind of what I'm looking for. Go ahead and pick a book, and that was the one he picked. And
it's good work.
I know. I was like, that's not something I personally would have picked for myself, and I loved it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
God, okay. Yeah. Next time I come over, we might just swipe that from you.
It literally was like one, like, I mean, this is a one sitting episode, but it was like an afternoon that I just sat down and read real quick.
Now I feel like I'm just thinking about all the other one sitting reads that we didn't mention in this.
Oh, I'm sure. Like, as soon as we end, usually on the nights that we record, that night I like start to have books going into through my head.
Yeah. Just like right now, I'm like, oh, I could have talked about The Hour of the Star again easily.
Yeah. Or but
she didn't.
The Story of an Hour. Oh, I think I was saving that for the short story.
I love Story of an Hour.
Ooh, it's so great.
A great one. Yeah, I'm excited. A little look ahead, or maybe behind, depending on when this comes out. But we're going to do a short story episode. So Woo-hoo. Let us know your favorite short stories as well. Should we get into, we also have a couple TBR picks, right? You have three, yeah. I have three.
I have two.
Oh.
But I can throw a third in there.
Doesn't matter. I thought that we were both on the same page, but I guess we're not.
Let me just grab. There's a book I'm thinking of, but I can't remember the name of it. So I'm going to grab it.
Okay.
She's returned, and she has her third honorable mention.
Wow, she does.
Honorable mention, TBR, she said.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. So we each got three for our TBR. Would you like to share your first? Would you like to share yours first?
Yes, my first one is The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night. I also just realized I left my phone in the other room, which has the author's name. So I don't remember it, but it's a very famous author.
I have it literally right over there, but my glasses aren't updated enough, so I can't read the spine.
You are totally fine. It's my fault for leaving the thing that has my notes in it. So we will do what we can. But that's the first one I want to read. I know it's really popular. That like orange cover, and I know it's about like a neurodivergent boy who tries to solve the death. I don't want to say it's a murder. I'd hope no one would ever murder an animal, especially a dog. But it might be, so I don't know.
A dog just got murdered in a book that I'm reading. Yeah, just, it was hard.
I just don't need to hear it, you know?
The cruelty, it's terrible.
Yeah.
So my first TBR will make Kendra really happy, and that's Freshwater by Akweke Emezi. I just gotta read them, man. I know, Kendra's shocked, but like happy shocked.
I haven't read it.
You've read Freshwater.
No, I've read The Death of Vivek Oji, but I haven't read Freshwater.
Didn't you just read it?
No, I just read their memoir.
Oh,
Pearson Thurin.
Whoopsie doopsie. Yeah, okay. Well, I've heard great things about all of their writing, and Freshwater came up as like a lot of people said that it's just a great one to go through quickly. Not like the most like challenging read, but just like absolutely beautiful. And everything that I've heard about Emezi's writing has been fantastic. So I don't know if I'm going to start with this one, but it's definitely on my to read list.
I'm with you. It's also on my to read list. I was making that face out of excitement, but also like, I didn't even think to put Freshwater on this fucking list, which it should be. So it's my honorable TBR mention.
Yeah, I think maybe over fall break for me, I'm going to finally read one Emezi. We'll see. I'm a mood reader. Don't hold me to it, but I really want to read their writing.
Dude, same. Me looking at my summer TBR still on the shelf. So it is what it is. God.
Don't remind me. What is your next TBR?
So this book is called Slipping by Muhammad Kier. I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong. This is a book, I'm holding it up as if anyone but August can see it. This is a book that I got sent from Green Apple, not like sent for free. I have a subscription through Green Apple, which is really cool, but they pick the book for you. And so it's like a really cool alternative to Book of the Month. So I would recommend it because it's like a blind date with a book. And so like comes in this cute package, which gives you like the synopsis and what one of the employees there like loves about the book. And so I don't know anything other than like what that person wrote, because I was like, I'm not going to read the back. I'm going to go in with just that knowledge. And I'm really excited for it. Yeah.
I trust the Green Apple staff. Green Apple Books in San Francisco, they know what's up.
Yeah. So. And no matter where you are in the world, or maybe not world, anywhere in the US, I don't know if they do international shipping, you can also do this subscription.
It's so cool. And they like package it really sweetly. It's a great spot.
Yeah.
I love that. That's so cute.
Yeah. What's your next TBR?
My next one is actually a book that I have been meaning to read for the longest time, because this was my mentor in both undergrad and graduate school's favorite person. It's Borges, Jean-Louis Borges. I've never said his first name before, so it feels weird. And that's Ficciones.
Nice.
Never Good read it before. You. I really like the Borges that I have read. So I'm a little mad at myself for not having read this one before. So
I've never read any Borges.
Oh, dude, I only had because my mentor is absolutely obsessed, and he's such a talented writer. Like, he's absolutely superb, but not one of my favorites, but still like super interesting and very important.
Mm-hmm. I feel that.
What's your next pick?
Written on the Body by Jeanette Winterson. Nice. I really don't know much about this book. I know it's very short. I know I like Jeanette Winterson, and I know it showed up on Google when I Googled books under 150 pages. So that's
cool. Fits all that criteria.
I know it has a lot to do with like sexuality or like a sexual awakening. Mm. And I know Jeanette Winterson, who's queer, does a lot of self-insertion into her novels. So I have a feeling it's going to be about like queer desire or like a queer relationship. I really don't know though.
I'm looking directly at my copy of his, Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, such a great book.
I have it right there and I need to fucking read it. I'll get to it eventually. Okay, and then so my final pick for my TBR is Blow Up and Other Stories by Julio Cortazar, who is the works that I have read by, it might be Cortaza. I apologize if I mispronounced his name. But the short stories I've read from him already, the one that immediately comes to mind is a short story called Continuity of Parks. Stellar. Like, I am absolutely obsessed with this short story. I actually had the pleasure of being able to teach it when I was a TA for a global short stories class, and it was just everything I want. It's so interesting. There's so many like layerings of like different narrations of different perspectives. And I mean, from the short stories I read, I'm already obsessed. So I just want to read more of his short stories and just more of his work all around.
That's super interesting. I know that feeling where you're like, I'm obsessed with you, but I haven't read everything you've written.
I think I'm just like so wrapped up in the short stories of his that I've already read, specifically Continuity of Parks, where I'm like, well, I'll just reread Continuity of Parks, which isn't good to do, but also it's great to do because I love that story so much.
Yeah, I feel that.
And all right. What's your last? Oh, wait, no, wait, you already
that was my third one. Yours. Mm-hmm. That was some work
done.
We are donezo. That was our very special, and I mean very special because every episode is special, on One Sitting Reads. So as August said, definitely like DM us or message us in some capacity about what your favorite One Sitting Reads are, ones you want to add to your TBR. Kindly let us know if you disagree with some of our ratings. Remember, we're human. We say things that you might not agree with, and that's okay.
And also let us know if any of these books took you ages to get through. It's always good hearing those different perspectives. We really appreciate them.
Totally. Oh, that's such a good point. Like, just because a book is 50 pages doesn't mean it's a one sitting read, because it can be miserable for people.
Yeah. And even some books that are like 300 plus pages can be a one sitting read.
Totally. Yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. You know what to do. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, why not subscribe, review, rate and review. We really appreciate it. If you have the time to write a written review, we really appreciate seeing those. We're also really close to hitting 50 reviews. So if you want to be that one to get us to 50, could be cute. We'd appreciate it. So you can do that. Sadly, on Spotify, you can't leave reviews, but you can follow. So make sure you hit that subscribe button.
Yeah. And as always, you can find us on Instagram either as a unit on Book Dumb Podcast or individually. So I'm Kendra. So you can find me at Kendra Lapp.
And you can find me, August, at Iggy Poop.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you'll, I don't know what I was going to say. I was going to want to see you next week, but you, I won't see you. You won't see me. Anyway,
that's kind thank of the you. Whole point of this. We're like John Cena here.
Oh,
see me.
Wow.
Wow. We're actually a John Cena podcast.
The high art.
Okay. Well, we hope that you're having a lovely day.
Bye.